Ladies and gentlemen, I'm here tonight with Malifus for the first time on the Big Footy Podcast, and joined also by podcast regular and all things Essendon expert, Prosecutor. Good evening, gentlemen.
G'day, how are you, mate?
It's been a long day.
It's Ogcat now, actually. It's just gone through the pipeline today, and the prosecutor is dead, and long live the Ogcat.
Oh, really?
Seems I'm bored as well and decided to, you know, change of scenery might be in the works. So the odd cat is in the building.
Okay.
Nice.
You heard it here first, people. The name change is as good as a holiday. Mal, how's your day been?
It's been excellent, actually. Very, very, very different. Hanging out with a mate. Had a few things on today. So still pretty cruisy. Just come back from London a few months ago. So, yeah, getting amongst it.
Excellent. I spent most of my morning, as most of you will be aware, copying things from Twitter to the forum.
Excellent. Very noble pursuit.
To the point where I may have developed RSI or something, but probably not as bad as the guy doing the actual Twittering. So,
no, I spent all my day on Tinder, so I also have RSI for swiping right too much. So, yeah, it's all pretty much the same thing.
Again, another noble pursuit.
Anyway, we're going to talk briefly, just get some thoughts on how the case proceeded and where we're going to go from here. We must stress that while Malifus is actually a qualified lawyer, this should not be construed as legal advice or even expert advice.
Very inexpert.
It's purely a gut feel, it's purely opinion, and they're a dime a dozen at the moment, and I do strongly recommend that if you would like a professional opinion, that you read the blog at sociallitigator.com.
It's a very good blog, that one.
She's put some thoughts together and things like that there, and they've got some updates. And not to mention the Twitter feeds from today as well. So you can find all of that in the Aftermath thread that we're creating shortly. Mal, how did you see the case?
No surprises. I mean, not even, you know, the big sort of AFL-related bombshells. I don't think anyone can really put their hand on their heart and say they were genuinely surprised by that. I didn't get any real surprises from the case. I mean, I was kind of picking Andruska. She was going to get in a bit of strife, and she did yesterday. Judge Middleton didn't say anything that really surprised me. He certainly seemed to indicate from most of his questions that you know, reading between the lines, that he had had some serious doubts about the legality of the joint investigation, and it's my gut feeling at this stage that I think he's probably gonna hold that it was unlawful. But that said, sorry Essendon faithful, it's also my opinion that I think he's gonna let the show cause notices stand, and we could kind of see that he was happy with the AFL having the power to collect the information. And, you know, there's no doubt that ASADA can go to the AFL and get that information. The question was whether they could do it at the same time. And in my mind, that answer is no. And nowhere is a joint investigation mentioned in the legislation. And for reasons that are fairly easy to understand when one looks at that trial, the conflict of interest that ASADA found itself in. I mean, obviously the AFL was conflicted, trying to look after Essendon, while at the same time, you know, trying to punish them, get the interim report to hit them up with the fines. At least three times throughout in the early stages of the investigation, that conflict between the AFL and ASADA reared its ugly head. And we had the interim report was one of them. That was a big one. We had the player, the waivers. We at ASADA hereby agree to give the Essendon players favourable treatment. Those things, effectively the pleas. And some of the assurances that were being given, that secretly taped video message was another one. And we saw ASADA try to distance itself from the AFL a few times before, but basically they cut all ties. My feeling is that he's going to... I do have a feeling throughout the trial that His Honour had more or less made his mind up, which is unsurprising. Was certainly leaning a certain way. And his questions were fairly consistent throughout to both sides. I think the only thing that's going to delay now is going to be His Honour obviously finalising that decision, and he's going to be very, very, very thorough in writing the decision up, because, you know, we have a small army of Queen's Counsels hovering around, ready to jump on any one typo or ambiguous passage in the reasoning.
All right, Pross, what are your thoughts, Mark?
All right, I'll throw a question your way, Malifus. Perhaps the biggest one to come out of that is the fact that I'm of the same opinion as well, that the investigation will be found to be unlawful. However, the show cause notices will stand.
I guess the
question to throw to you then is, how can this investigation be found illegal, yet at the same time the ASADA be able to get
records, notices?
Because just from my outside perspective, when it comes to legal matters, it would seem like if you were to have an investigation to be ruled illegal, then surely the information that was gathered during that process, specifically those interviews where that very much was a joint interview, how they can still stand in the transcripts from those specific interviews. I can understand if the AFL, for instance, did the interviews again or aside to them separately, but I guess you get the gist where I'm saying, how can they actually stand when they've been found to be illegal?
Absolutely. Yeah. It was, and I go back to, I mean, there's a broad sort of answer to that question. I mean, and the starting point is it's not always, you know, black or white. You know, it's not always all or nothing. You know, the judge may very well find, and it looks like he will find, you know, irregularities or problems with the actual investigation process itself. But then when he turns his mind to the outcome, I mean, for example, his honour has been very clear. He said it a few times that, I mean, he's not going to be making any declaratory judgments. You know, he's not going to basically saying, ASADA, you can never, ever issue show cause notices to these Essendon players. He's not going to go that far. And the reason for that is that his honour is quite aware of the fact, and ASADA's submissions actually contained a lot in this. And this is what led me to think ASADA have effectively conceded the joint investigation was unlawful. They contained a lot of case law in their submissions about illegally or, you know, unlawfully obtained evidence still being allowed in after the fact, even after being declared unlawful. And they use a lot of examples in relation to, like, illegally executed search warrants, where after the trial, the judges said, well, yes, the search warrant's unlawful. However, there is absolutely nothing stopping the police from going back in tomorrow and executing a lawful search warrant. Or, in fact, you know, the police may have already done so. So there's actually nothing to be gained by ruling out the evidence that was obtained. And it's going to be a similar sort of thing here, I feel. I mean, his honour has indicated a couple of times that there's literally nothing stopping ASADA from reissuing the show cause notices. I mean, from writing to the AFL and saying, under the Act, under the ASADA Act, we're requiring you to forward information that you hold to re-interview the players, re-forward that information to us, and then we will reissue show cause notices based upon that information.
So just to confirm, if they were to reissue show cause notices, and I mean, we assume they'll have to have the interviews. They would have to restage the interviews to get those transcripts, or would they be able to use the current transcripts?
It depends on what his honour might rule that the evidence obtained is tainted beyond all. It has to be excluded. It's tainted and just cannot be used. In which case, the show cause notices can either stand as they are, excluding that evidence. And ASADA raised issues with this as well, where he may very well let the show cause notices stand and let any future decision makers, such as the anti-doping rule violation panel and the AFL tribunal, if it comes to that, if the show cause notices are upheld and the players are entered on the register of findings, allow them to use that information, because they're not bound by the same rules of evidence that a court is. So the anti-doping rule panel, they can take into account any evidence. They're not bound by normal common law rules of hearsay or anything like that, and neither are the AFL tribunal. So they don't have those rules. So they could use that illegally obtained evidence if they wanted to, with a caveat on it that it was obtained unlawfully. So as to what weight they put on that evidence is a different story, but he could allow that. And that was the whole downstream decision-making process that they were arguing. His Honour's got really, I mean, we're presuming again that the joint investigation's unlawful. He's got a couple of options here. He could strike the whole thing out ultra vires, and I don't think he's going to do that. That'd be the best result for Essendon. He could make declaratory orders ruling parts of the evidence unlawful, but not prohibiting ASADA from going off and recollecting that evidence. So in that case, the show cause notices would stand with effectively parts redacted. You know, and it would be up to ASADA, if they wished, to go out and recollect that evidence. Or he could just let them stand as are, with a caveat on them effectively for any downstream decision makers to be mindful of some of the evidence it contains. And I think they're the three most likely outcomes. There's a few others scattered in there that his honour might pursue, but they'd be the three I think he'd be looking at.
All right. Just my reading of this case from today, and again, I stress, I'm not a lawyer by any stretch of the imagination, but basically from reading the transcripts from today through Twitter and everything, I get the impression that the judge wasn't overly impressed with James Heard's lawyers and their argument. What was...
That was my feeling as well. There was a couple of points where he stopped Heard's counsel in his summation, and they had a fairly rigorous debate about the interpretation of a couple of sections. I think section 13 was one of them. And it was very clear from the end of that to and fro between the parties that His Honour still didn't agree with the interpretation that was being put forward to him. And I do feel that that the Heard camp in particular were trying to, I think, too narrowly constrain the Act. You know, there was a lot of information about NAD scheme information being released. And I thought that the NAD scheme information was dealt with pretty much day one. His Honour pretty much indicated that he was pretty happy with the release of the interim report being for a purpose related to a NAD scheme violation. You know what I mean? It wasn't really in contest. And my understanding was Heard's camp was trying to narrow that one down a bit too much for His Honour's liking. So, yeah, that was my reading of that anyway.
Prost,
did you see that one?
I guess to deviate a little bit, I found the most interesting thing today when Justice Middleton was putting forward the proposition that when he was discussing what remedies could come out of it in regards to, you know, the show cause notices in general, and it was suggested that the AFL, that if, you know, you want the whole show cause notices to be ruled ultra vires or whatever, you'd have to bring the AFL in as a party. I don't know if you saw that particular tweet because...
I think he was more, if he ruled them ultra vires, there was a discussion today, I don't know if this is the same one, but His Honour was referring to, you know, if they were ruled ultra vires, like what would stop, and he did ask this question, like what would simply stop ASADA from going back to the AFL, as they're clearly authorised to do, to request information, and from the AFL forwarding them that information? In other words, like what's to stop the ASADA from simply, assuming this process is polluted, from simply starting again? You know, and I think that was his main, and it was never really answered by anyone. Obviously, ASADA didn't answer it because that was their whole issue. Even if this is knocked on the head, we're just going to do it again. We're going to issue them again, and they'll be out within a week or two.
Yep.
So why not? They'll contain exactly the same information that they do now. So so why knock them on the head?
So I believe, coming back to that, I believe that's why, I think it was How's the... Yep. He suggested that if... to stop it completely, Essendon would have to bring the AFL as a party to the case.
It was interesting the AFL weren't called, and you know, Wook and I were discussing that a bit earlier. I mean, they're not really all that relevant, and none of the evidence in relation to the AFL was questioned or challenged by anyone. In relation to Heard, in particular, had a lot to say about what the AFL were and weren't doing, you know, what he was and wasn't told, and you know, a few tip-offs that Andrew Dimitri may or may not have made. Before the club may or may not have self-reported. But, look, the AFL weren't necessarily required to be a party. I mean, it was really ASADA were the ones who were alleged to have acted ultra vires, and, you know, there was no real... I mean, AFL witnesses could have been called, but neither of the parties saw it relevant to do so. And His Honour can't really make a judgment against AFL. Well, they're a corporation, I suppose he can, but... there was no grounds pleaded against the AFL. You know, the AFL didn't have a case to answer. They were just being called in as ancillary witnesses in case, I don't know, Dimitri wanted to pop in and say he didn't tip anyone off. So, not really relevant. We might hear a little bit more about Dimitri, Crime Commission thing later on, hopefully. We'll see how that goes.
All right, so how long before we get a result from this? How long before the judge rules?
Yeah, it's common practice for a judge to reserve his decision, very common practice. They do it pretty much all the time. I was hopeful His Honour might give some indication, and I certainly have the feeling that he is leaning a certain way. It just depends how long it takes him to write it, effectively. He's got to go through and write the full, you know, ratio decidendi, the reasons for his decision, you know, and everything else in there, including obiter, any passing comments he wants to make about what went wrong, why it went wrong, and, you know, what ASADA and other, you know, Commonwealth bodies should do in the future to avoid this from occurring. So, you know, we'll get clarity. Both sides had valid arguments. So, you know, it is an important legal case from a legal perspective to clarify exactly what ASADA can or cannot do. But he's going to be very thorough, as I've said. I mean, we have some very experienced Queen's Counsels are going to be reading that with a very, you know, that they'll be looking for anything they can twist and perhaps take to an appeal to the full court. I know both sides have ruled out appeals, but yeah, we'll see what happens once the final decision is released. Mm. I would anticipate 2 weeks would be my ballpark figure.
Okay.
All right. And what's the process for the decision being released? So will all parties have to come back to court? Will it just be distributed to the parties? Or
yeah, generally they'll be called back in. The court will notify them of a time. We'll bring them in and we'll generally read out the result to them. And I dare say that will be probably televised at that point. It's such a high-profile case. I'd be very surprised. I mean, His Honour had already approved for full televisation of the opening submissions. So I would not be surprised to see if that was not televised. You know, he would notify the parties and give them a few days. And yeah, it should be released on the court's website. So it'll be a reported decision, and you'll be able to download it and read through it. And I, for one, I'm looking forward to having a bit of a look and seeing what His Honour says. I have a feeling that His Honour is going to mention a fair bit of... Where ASADA failed is they failed to keep the AFL at arm's length. And they worked too closely with them and in the process polluted their own decision-making. They cannot be said to have made impartial decision-making when they were so closely bound with the AFL. And I think that's their problem here. And I reckon that's what he's going to hit them with. But, you know, flip a coin.
All right, Pross, I noticed Essendon changed their submission, their original submission, apparently, from what they were going to today. Do you have any idea what brought that on?
To be honest, I'm not across what the change to submission was. Do you have a summary of it, or
all I saw this morning was that Essendon had requested a change in their. Had said that they.
I saw that. Yeah, they pleaded. I think it was the herd camp actually. They effectively were pleading a new grounds today. I wasn't completely all over it. His Honour stopped them and said, "Well, if you want to plead that, you'll have to amend your statement of claim, because you know your statement of claim isn't currently pleading that particular arm." Okay. I think it was an issue in relation to that paragraph 13 thing. I'm not all over it either. But did they request permission? Did they?
They said that they were changing their argument or something this morning.
Okay.
I honestly can't remember. It was 12 hours ago now.
Today and I don't know. I missed that one, so I've apparently talked too much on it. All I saw was they wanted to. I think they wanted to add another arm, like another grounds in for their claim there. And His Honour talked about it and said, "Well, if you want to do that, you'll have to amend your statement of claim."
All right. So they've been given another 24 hours to put in written submissions, I believe.
Yeah, I think that's connected to that as well. Yeah.
However, from what I saw, both the Essendon lawyers and the ASADA lawyers didn't want the time, so I think it's just the herd camp potentially that are going to be making use of that.
And what's...
Yes, and I would assume ASADA would get a reply in relation to that as well, if they're going to make a fresh pleading. But yeah, we'll see how that goes.
All right. Pross, just non-legally, what's your read on herd status at Essendon now?
Well, to be honest, I don't think much has changed from this court case. I mean, the only thing that really has, as Malifus alluded to before, the only real thing that's changed in this is that stuff's just become under oath. We already knew about the alleged tip-off. We already knew about the threats or, you know, the speculation about threats in signing a deed or settlement. So, I mean, the only real thing that... I mean, even slightly, you could say this fresh is that he that Herd finally admitted that it was words placed in his mouth when it came to taking full responsibility and you know, other decisions and press conferences and statements that got released. So, to be honest, I don't think too much changes. I think the end game when it comes to Herd not coaching will be if infraction notices are issued and are upheld. When it comes to either Herd himself, obviously, and particularly the players. So for me, I still think that he'll be coming back under a contractor thing. I mean, I'm on record as being preferring to go towards a different direction, a la Thompson. But, you know, I think it's at this point, it's inevitable that he'll be back, barring any infraction notices being issued.
Do you think on that cross, like, I mean, effectively, I mean, Hurd did a pretty good job of throwing Evans under a bit of a bus. I mean, he basically told him Evans was the one that told him to lie to Asada, and yep. You know, Evans was the one who self-reported and pulled him aside and said, you know, this is the story we're going to spin, effectively. So he did a reasonably good job of throwing, I mean, there's a CEO and a chairman, isn't it?
He was chairman.
Yeah, so did a bit of a hatchet job on Evans. Not a bad one. It wasn't anything we didn't know, but I mean, you know, he kind of announced it to the world, and he sort of turned on the AFL a bit as well. And you know, we know what he said about Demetrio and old Gillen there. And I was looking at it going, I mean, if this goes pear shaped, you know, I mean, if worse comes to worse, the show cause notices stand, and you know, like they're upheld, and it goes to tribunal, and you know, doomsday sort of eventuates. I mean, it's the AFL. I mean, the Essendon Football Club are going to be relying upon the AFL extremely heavily for financial, you know, draft sanctions to potentially field a side next year. I mean, it's going to be bad. And I was somewhat surprised by Hurd sort of effectively throwing the AFL in it. You know, I don't know. I do have a concern about whether or not he can go on after that.
Yeah. There's a couple of aspects from that to address. The first one is the David Evans, James Hurd issue. I seem to be in the very, very, I'm very much in the minority of Essendon supporters when it comes to, I think it was James Hurd throwing Evans under the bus as opposed to Evans apparently throwing Hurd under the bus, if you ask the most.
Yeah.
It'd be a very interesting psychological observation. It'd be a goldmine for student psychologists or people going for PhDs to actually have a look at this investigation and analyse some of the mindsets of supporters. But Evans thing, I find that I can't see how Evans is the bad guy in this. Specifically with the tip off thing. I mean, all that's happened is Evans may or may not have told Hurd that, you know, just don't mention Demetrio telling us or whatever. As it turns out, from what I've heard from a couple of sources, Demetrio never actually told Evans that, yes, you are under investigation by the ACC. He's a smarter man than that. He raised some comments about drugs in sport, rah rah rah, some concerns, and Evans put one and two together and got that.
He just happened to call Essendon, who was the team under suspicion. And Andruska's notes were fairly clear on that. I mean, everyone in that room knew.
Yeah.
Without the ACC saying it, everyone knew precisely who was. Yeah.
And this conversation with Evans first happened before that 31st meeting on the 31st, from what I understand. In any case, I mean, in the end, Evans has just asked to have Hurd. Fair enough, Hurd's gone to the investigators and mentioned that. I mean, that's his prerogative and no harm done there. Where the harm was done, I believe, was when Hurd went to Mark Robinson in August of last year, I believe it was, and let this out into the public sphere, if only to get back at Andrew Demetrio and try to knock him off at the expense of David Evans. Now, I don't know about you, but that's the act that I see of throwing someone under the bus, not Evans asking.
For mine, it was Hurd again declaring war on the AFL, and I was just looking going, the AFL were the ones that, I mean, it's like even the other day, the AFL were the ones that tipped Essendon off. You know, I mean, well, it depends on who you want to believe in, and you can clearly see the AFL have been trying their hardest to look after the Essendon players throughout the whole process.
All right.
I mean, they're always going to find the club, but anyway.
We're covering some old ground there.
Can I just go to the second point of Malphus' thing when it comes to cooperation with the AFL and Hurd's, I guess, vitriol towards him?
Yep, go nuts, man.
Yeah, I think it's a very pertinent point. I think it comes back to the, I don't know if arrogance is the term, but the shortness of the football club, and I think that was typified by the club releasing a statement on the very day short show cause notices were issued, with the club saying they were of the firm belief that no show cause notices would be issued. And, I mean, it that statement seemed at the time very, very short-sighted. Yep. And I guess it comes back to this now that it's another short-sighted approach, especially from Hurd. I think the thing that frustrates me about my fellow Essendon supporters is there is a large group who seem to put Hurd either equal with or greater than the club. And
You're preaching to the converted on that one.
Yeah. And I understand to Hurd, it's fair enough that he puts himself first. I mean, that's survival. It's fair enough. I completely understand. However, that at the same time is detrimental to Essendon's cause. And in the very likely event that infraction notices are issued, and I mean, then it becomes debatable whether they actually get upheld or whatnot. But yes, let's say they are for the reasons of this discussion. Then you're right. We're between a rock and a hard place because, you know, we've bit the hand that feeds us.
Exactly. Yeah, and that was I guess that was my only concern. You know, like it just seemed to me to be madness. I mean, and it started back just before the interim report when the parties declared war on one another, and you know, Evans from mine was just saying, look, James, be honest, do the right thing. You know, let's get this up in front. If anything's happened, something's happened. But let's be open and honest about it. But just don't say anything about the Demetrio thing because we're going to need the AFL later on. If worse comes to worse, we're going to need the AFL.
Yeah.
And that seems to have gone a little bit out the window now. So,
yeah, because obviously Hurd's obviously fighting for survival, but at the time he was as well. Yeah. I think his solution was, well, you know, if I'm going down, I'm bringing you with me. And
bringing the AFL down with me.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, it served no one to any benefit at all. I mean, Demetri has got a plum job on the crown board. He's gone out, well, not with his head held. Oh, well, you'd say he doesn't have a clean slate, but I mean, you know, he's got out of the game. He's not going to have any problems with this ACC tip-off, let's be honest. I mean, I think the time for that's come and gone. And I mean, all Hurd's done is, you know, smeared the club, smeared his name, and more or less put us in the shit should, as you said, should down the road we require AFL assistance. So, again, it's mutually assured destruction, except it's madness, let's be honest.
I agree. I mean, I just think back to our salary cap infractions at Carlton. You know what I mean? We fought it, then a couple of days later fell in a line. You know, and yeah, it hurt, but, you know, at the end of the day, it was the right thing to do. You know, and you know, you can't really sit there and go, well, you know, hey, we took John Elliott's name off the stand, you know, we sacked him, we got a whole new, you know, bunch of dudes in, you know what I mean? Like we sold our soul to move to another ground. We went through all that stuff, you know, like, you know, so, you know, if anything, it's odd that a lot of Carlton supporters probably have sympathy for you guys as well, if you know what I mean? Like, it's a rough time. I mean, you know, I was there 10 years ago, mate, so I know exactly what you're going through with that as well.
All right. Just want to wrap it up. I want to keep this relatively short and fast, and we're running out of my allocated time for this. Who, in your opinion, guys, were the winners out of this?
The lawyers.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. We're talking a solid six-figure sum has gone over the last 3 days, like a solid six-figure sum.
Yep. I think Justice Middleton came out looking pretty good out of this. Definitely.
He did.
He gave everyone a fair hearing. He came off as logical, in touch with both parties, and I can't fault him. I don't think anyone has been able to fault him on both sides of the fence.
Yep.
Asked smart questions.
Yeah, he was well over all the issues. His Honour opened with a joke with the bouncing the ball down thing at the commencement of the trial, which was as I've said was met by many guffaws from the bench. So. You know, it was quite funny, but yeah, he was definitely switched on. I mean, he was asking all the right questions, I think. So I think I've a great deal of faith in his honour.
I think the MVP for this round though goes to Chris Tayas, the guy tweeting from the court himself. No one knew who he was, and now everyone knows who he is.
It's gone up to a solid 2,500 followers when I followed him at about 100.
He's
put his name up in lights, and good on the lad. I mean, it's a great way to take the initiative in your career as well, just to go down, you know, go to an event, bloody get around it, and just, well, with social media, just tweet about it, and, you know, here he is. He's got his name up in lights, and good on him.
Get him a sponsor.
So those were obviously those are obviously the winners. Who were the losers out of this?
AFL.
Yeah, look, the AFL look bad. They're going to be quiet about it.
I mean, it was all about damage mitigation for them because, as you say, they had no real right of response. It was just hopefully as little comes out as possible of their misgivings. And while they lost, I don't think it was anything that was too detrimental to their cause. But I think Asada and specifically Andruska came out of this looking rather inept.
She did. Yeah, she looked quite bad, unfortunately. She did look like someone who was a little bit in over her head to start with. They'd gone from nothing until, you know, the blackest day in Australian sport. She had pressure coming from her from all sides, and unfortunately, I don't think she was over it. I mean, for mine, the loser out of this would be Australian rules football. I mean, that's, for mine, over this whole saga, this last couple of years, I mean, and I've been pretty strong on this, I suppose. You know, we should be sitting there laughing at Jack Watts jokes. You know what I mean? Like, this is just, it's just been dragging on and on and on, you know, and it's an international thing, you know. Like, people are watching this. WADA's watching this. You know, we've got the finals a couple of weeks away. We've got a couple of blockbuster matches on the weekend, and, you know, we're sitting there dissecting a court case that probably should just never have happened. I mean, none of this should ever have happened. Oh. You know, footy's a release, not this.
Very true.
It's a good summation.
All right, we're going to leave it there then. Thanks very much for coming on at short notice, Pross, or whatever you call yourself these days.
No worries,
the artist formerly known as Prosecutor. And
I like it.
I think I'm picking the wrong time to get out of the legal username profession.
And thank you very much, Malifus, for your thoughts and feedback on the cases and whatnot today. Again, we stress he is a lawyer, but this should not be construed as legal advice by any stretch of the imagination.
Absolutely.
But if you
mate, no worries.
If you have questions on real estate law,
yeah,
send him a PM.
Any housing law, click
anyone. I, of course, have been the Wookiee. I know nothing about any of this. And we'll see you all on the forums. Tomorrow night we'll be doing the main Big Footy podcast, so tune in when that comes up. But thanks all the same. That's it, guys.
All right, thanks, mate.